Hello, this is Victor Nyauchi, listening to Clubhouse and Podcast.
Not that cricket. Welcome to another episode of the Clubhouse End Podcast. My name is Larry Quiridai, and today we continue the conversation about national teams. Yesterday it was about the women's national teams. Now we talk about the men's national teams. With the exciting international calendar that's coming over the next 7 months, what will it take to get into the national team? For those who are in there, what needs to be done? And what memories need to be picked up from what has happened before in order to create a successful Zimbabwe side? I'm joined by Darlington Matamba Nadzo, Eli Tamerepi and Tinashe Chimbambo on this episode of...
Hi, it's Alex Lees here, Durham cricketer, and you're listening to Clubhouse End Podcast.
Okay, so it's the Clubhouse End Podcast. We're talking now about the men's performance. World records were set out in Kenya, and I remember watching it and thinking two things. I'm glad I didn't go, because that would have been like, oh. There's a point where the sixes get boring, really. And then also I'm like, oh, but if I was there, it'd have been so awesome. And then it had been such a joy to hang out with my Kenyan friends and stuff like that. And those who must not be mentioned. I know Eli is looking at me. So, Eli, first of all, give us the rundown of what the experience was. How did Zimbabwe come in as the big boys? What were their attitude and stuff like that?
The experience was quite amazing, to be truthful. Zimbabwe, yes, they were the favorites from get-go. Everybody feared them. Like, oh, we're playing the big boys. These guys, they rub shoulders with stars. Like, at one particular point in time, we really had trouble doing the post-match presentation because everybody wanted pictures with Raza, even the captain on the losing side. And you had to call and like, my guy, you are the captain, so can you act accordingly? But it was pretty much, yeah. I had a chat with Raza just before the start of the tournament, trying to find out what is the strategy? What are we coming here for? And as diplomatic as he was to say that, you know what, we will give everybody the respect that they deserve as a team because we are playing them. So we will treat this like we're treating any other international game that we're playing. But what he did not mention was the strategy that they had from the get-go is, gentlemen, we're here to dominate. We're here to people to really feel that we are ranked 12th for a reason. And as much as we fell down the pecking order to be here, we don't deserve to be here. We're going to show it in the manner in which we carry ourselves, whether we're batting, bowling, and fielding. And they excelled in all those departments. And they did it quite well. The only stiff opposition that I really, Zimbabwe's, was tested was against Kenya. Pretty much because there were tactical decisions that were made. One on the surface that was used. The surface they used had not been used for much of the tournament because everybody who has been to Kenya, who plays in Kenya, knows that that is a low scoring surface. It's not the first two preferred wickets at Gymkhana in Kenya. And when they saw Zimbabwe, they were like, we're using the third strip. And they, even if when I spoke to the Kenyan captain after losing the toss, I'm like, what would you be comfortable defending here? Is like, if we can get Zimbabwe around 120, 130, we'd be happy. So it kind of gets you thinking like, my friend, did you watch yesterday's game of 344 and you're talking of 130? What are you talking about? It's like, yeah, on this surface, if we get Zimbabwe to score 130, we're pretty much okay because they know that the surface does not have much to offer. So when Zimbabwe posted 164, it really was above what was a par score on that particular surface and Kenya was a worried side, you know, like, oh my gosh. They passed with 30 runs plus in terms of what we were expecting. But everybody was like, guys, 164, what happened to the 344 from the other day? But there was a plan in play from a particular side who knows the surface pretty well. And I think from how Zimbabwe went about it, they did a pretty fantastic job. Being ruthless, I had a chat with Simmons after the tournament last game, like, what was being ruthless? Was it part of the strategy? And he's like, oh yeah, definitely it was. We didn't come here just to rub shoulders and, you know, on an African safari. People need to feel who we are, and I believe that's what we did. The makeup of the side, I did ask him about it, the youngsters in the side, what did he make of it? It's like, pretty much that's the look that he wants to go for. Yes, the experienced guys that were not there, but he needs to look at the future going forward, of which Raza said that's part of the Zimbabwe cricket strategy going forward, that they need to be very frank with themselves. Like, after these guys are gone,
what's
next? Mm. Yeah. And I think there's some, you know, some very flames that are burning bright that you can look forward to and say, okay, this will be good for Zimbabwe cricket.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't remember when last, and they were fit, that we didn't have Sean Williams and Craig Irvin on the same, the big three. And we've been talking about it, I think, for years to say, what happens after this big three?
And Tendai Chatara.
And Tendai Chatara, yes, that's another one. But we had a chat before this tournament, and you quite rightly say, look, what's the thing that they can't do that is batting? And except for the one match where I think rain was a factor, Zimbabwe then bowled first. The rest, as you said, it was, we're gonna score bigger.
And I think that's probably it's gonna be the same at the next round of qualifying. What are the sides going to be? The sides going to be there. What can't they do that we can? Show up and do that. And again, so it's about being ruthless and continuing that. Because as you move higher and higher up the pecking order, okay, because we were talking when we were having a discussion about the women's game, we were talking about beating opponents and then looking for better opponents and beating those better opponents and then looking for better opponents until you're standing side by side with Australia and India. You know what I mean? I think that's the ideal, that I think we have a side that can do that. And I think it's just so important going forward to just maintain that really, really aggressive will to win.
And speaking of that, the Chimbambo, there is that aggressive will to win that came in with that. But I think a part of me felt a little bit bad for the African sides from the perspective that because Zimbabwe went to a qualifier, last time Kenya, I think Rwanda was the other team that qualified for the African qualifier. So Zimbabwe's taking that slot. If Zimbabwe had qualified for the World Cup, T20 World Cup directly by finishing the top 12 while over there, or in the top 12, the positions, then possibility of two more African countries plus South Africa and what's the other one? Zimbabwe. Maybe. I'm just saying that there's possible four African countries. So beyond this, how critical do you think for the development of African cricket is for Zimbabwe to get out of these qualifiers so that these other teams have an opportunity? I know some people say we need to be selfish and so forth, but we are part of the African Cricket Association, and we want African cricket to be successful.
It seems like Darren Tony has the perfect answer for this. He's asking for it, but...
So for me, right, there's a term I use called institutional memory, all right? I think Kenya have institutional memory. They've been at ICC events. They've played at World Cups. And they've understood that when you're playing against World Cup, you're playing against sides that are on paper better than you are. All right. And you've got to, in a sense, outthink them. Just to have a chance just to compete, you have to outthink them. And so what you've got is you've got sides like the Seychelles. Okay. They go back. If they continue creating institutional memory, they've got an understanding that, okay, if we want to be Africa's next representative of the T20 World Cup, how are we going to go and manage situations like facing Zimbabwe?
I mean, surely, Eli, if you're Gambia, it's like going into a football match and losing 10-0. What lessons are you learning from that? Other than, we, Other than maybe it was a bad day at the office, or we just shouldn't be playing at that level.
Well, it was a case of, I'd say, when you play the world's best. I remember there was one particular score in World Cup where it was 7-0 to one particular team. So they, one thing that I would want people to understand, there are levels to this game. You cannot dispute that. And if you say that you want to play at that level of saying, I want to be at the World Cup, definitely you need to do better than Zimbabwe. And you have to be beating sides like Zimbabwe.
Well, and then Zimbabwe needs to do better than Namibia and Uganda.
Right. So if you can't compete at that level, my friend, that just shows you the gravity of work that you need to do. Right. So lessons from Gambia. I had a brief chat with their captain. He says that there are plenty of lessons that we learned. That, you know what, we can't live in a cocoon where we play by ourselves and think we're good enough to go there. You know, we need to get ourselves out there a little bit more. Yes, we're ranked number 95. Probably that's the last number on the pecking order in terms of teams that play T20 cricket that the ICC recognizes. That's number 95 is the last down there. But we need to do better. The next better placed was Seychelles, which was 91. And Seychelles were like, we're far from Africa, from the rest of everybody. And the cost of bringing people home to say we play against them is a little bit too much for us. We can't handle that.
So in some instances, some of these guys are just happy to be there.
Exactly. So them playing in Zimbabwe, that's the World Cup for them. That's pretty much it.
That's why they're busy taking selfies instead of so I mean, going back now to Zimbabwe, we talked about it, and I could see from the images, even from the videos that Eli sent, you could see Rich and Garawa didn't really want to be there. A lot of the guys didn't want to be there. But that pain, what does it do for a Zimbabwean? You're saying the pain of the institutional memory, what does that do for a player? When it comes to not wanting to go back there again, for example?
It gives you perspective, Larry. It gives you perspective of what could be if players don't own the game. They own their own game. Because if you look around the 2018 qualifiers and then the last qualifier here at home as well, and then the one where Uganda did a number on us in Namibia, there is some responsibility there that players need to take. You know, preparation mentally, preparation physically, technically, all those things, how they go about their business out there. Because it's still going to be Tinashe Chimbambo betting out there. If I don't take responsibility of my own game, and if there's no 11 players that are taking ownership of their own game, same with this fitness issue that Darlington spoke about with the ladies. You know, you one-on-one on your own after the game, you need to look yourself in the mirror and say, where am I on the pecking order of what needs to be for me to be successful at international level? If you can't have that conversation with yourself and come up with real critical answers of where your action plan will start to look like, you will then find yourself in situations where, back home, because we've spoken about how the level of the local cup has dropped off, the level of the list A has dropped off, the level of the players that are coming up from under 19 has dropped off. So we are talking about a flawed development process back at home. So you can be a very big fish in a very small pond in Zimbabwe. And then you will meet somebody from Namibia who's been working very hard, and you think because they have a Namibian crest on the left of their chest, you are maybe
a big gun.
Exactly. It's a given that you must beat them. But the game has changed. The game is fast moving along, and players need to get to a point where they take their own responsibility and say, I need this to be able to get to a point where I can compete with a Virat Kohli. I need to do this for me to be able to compete with a Josh Hazlewood, because that's the benchmark for international cricket. And that's the same for the African nations that were at the qualifiers. They will look back and look at Zimbabwe and say, gentlemen, if we are to go back to those qualifiers again, how are we going to deal with Zimbabwe? How are we going to deal with a dominant force like Raza? How are we going to be able to face somebody who's bowling high 130s like Ngarava? Are we able to deal with the spin of Mafuta, for example? Okay? And then they have that institutional memory that Darlington is speaking about to say, this is what happened when we faced these sides. For us to improve by 1%, what must we do? For us to improve by 2%, what must we do? And then constantly be checking on themselves to make sure those processes are followed religiously, because this can be a 6-month plan, because you don't get to be from where Zimbabwe is against the African nations in 6 months. This has to be a 10-year plan. This has to be a 15-year plan, going back to grassroots, having the facilities that require you to play at this level, having the personnel, especially. You need to have the personnel around your system that requires that is required for you to play high-level cricket. Once you have that, then perhaps you will be able to compete.
As a coach, you look at it from the perspective of, okay, this is the scenario we have, but ultimately we've got Pakistan coming, we've got Afghanistan coming, we've got Ireland coming, and so that takes you into middle of February. These are international matches. They're so domestic. So, you know, I think in what is a very good position for a lot of international players is that if they drop out of the international, they can still go and play Logan Cup and so forth, because that will be happening at the same time. Then soon after that, you've got Bangladesh away. Then soon after that, you've got, the tour England. So this is and soon after that, you've got South Africa, the two tests, the triangular, including New Zealand. There's just a lot of cricket coming. How do you, as a player, sort of get into that zone that Chimbamba is talking about? Because, you know, for me, I was told as I grew up, someone can be smarter than you, but they cannot outwork you. But this is a reality that's coming in a month's time. Pakistan will be here.
You know, I think you're going to see the guys, for me, who've been working hardest over the last sort of 12 to 18 months. Those are the guys who are going to have success against Pakistan. I don't think you have enough time to do enough work to compete if you haven't been doing it. Okay? So we're going to see some, you know, I watched one of the games, a few of the games when they were in Kenya. I like the look of like Deon Myers personally. I like the look of Clive Madande.
Just talking about Clive Madande, the fact that he was getting into that team purely as a batsman, that's an interesting move, isn't it?
Yeah, and so for me, there's a couple of guys who've emerged. I mean, Brandon Mavuta is another one who has come back from what could have ended his career. He had an event in his life that could have ended his career, and he's come back from it. And it's only hard work that got him there, you know. And also, it's introspection. Be clear about why you're doing what you're doing, okay? If it's about money, money is always going to have a ceiling.
Although leaving $2 million on the table, right, like we talked about last time.
I understand this, but like, you know what it is? It's for me, there's a Maslow's law, what it's called, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If you're playing money for lower, you know, in that hierarchy of needs, if you're playing cricket and continue to play cricket at international level for the lower level of on the hierarchy of needs, which is money for me, essentially, like that's just food and clothes and accommodation. Okay. You set a limit on what you're capable of. But if you use cricket to self-actualize, to think to yourself that, how am I going to become the best version of Darlington that I could possibly be by playing this game? Then suddenly the world opens up and you can be truly great. But as long as you're playing for money, okay, $5,000 a month is a lot of money. But when you're playing for self-actualization, $20 million a year is not enough, if you think about it.
I mean, I could self-actualize for 5,000. Right? A lot of people could self-actualize for 5,000.
Yeah, but essentially what Darlington is trying to say is that the money that you get paid for high-level cricket isn't 5,000 a month.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
If you're playing high-level cricket and you are competing in the big leagues, for example, if you get into the IPL, you know, the recently announced deals is that you get $9,000 per game.
So you play 10 games.
That's $9,000 for 4 hours of work.
Yeah.
But then if you look back and
that's, it, that's before your, that's after, after your signing on.
Yes, exactly. But if you then look at that 4 hours, right? You break it down to how you want to practice your cut shot. You need days, years to master that. You, you come back to trying to master your off cutter, your leg cutter, your yorker as a bowler. Those needs hours and hours and hours of work.
And when you talk about that, Eli, one of those platforms that's going to be created, that's been created, that started this weekend, is the Logan Cup. And the coach, Justin Simmons, has made no, did not mince his words. Players should play red ball cricket.
That should be a basic. Why? Because with cricket, you only get better.
By the way, we're talking about, in case people are wondering, international players. So,
yes.
So there have been times where the international players would not play in certain matches, but he's made a requirement.
Yes, I agree with that totally. One, we don't really have a large pool of international players. I know some would say, I'm going to concentrate on white ball because, you know, that's what I'm good at. But we know the basic reason for it. It's where the money is from mostly. But we still have a mandate to compete competitively in terms of red ball. And that is a way of keeping people in check to say, you know what? Don't get it twisted. There is a mandate that we need to keep with and keep in line with. And that is to play test games. And looking forward, like from here, after this Pakistan series, there are 2 test matches against Afghanistan.
And then 2 more against
Ireland. So you can't be saying, you know what, I am going to just focus on white ball. You need to do both. Compete and see where you stand and, you know what, give yourself a chance. Not only for yourself, but also for the nation that has backed you up. So definitely, I think that's a good ploy that we should do that.
So, I mean, it looks like it's going to be towards middle of the month that they're going to go into the camp.
Just to add on to what Eli has just spoken about. Yes, there is a mandate to uphold the country's test status, which is important. But if I am in the mind of the national team coach, I'm not looking at the mandate. I'm looking at basics. The one thing that red ball cricket gives you that none other game gives you is your obsession to basics. You can't score a test 100 without basics. You can't score a test 5 without hitting the box for 15 overs. Okay? So if you are able to do that, go out there and take a test 3 for example, and that's bare minimum. All right? It means that when we give you a white ball and we want you to bowl in the power play and we've got 2 slips in the gully or in a wicket that's just doing enough for you to be able to say we can bowl first, you are able to come up there and hit top of off stump. You can't do that if you don't have test cricket values. Mm. You don't have that if you don't have the basis of test cricket. So if you, at a high sports club where many teams are choosing to bet second and chess over here because it flattens out in the afternoon, if you lose the toss, you've essentially lost the game if you are not a strong test side. Because in the morning, the ball is going to hoop around. There is a bit of cloud cover and a bit of rain in the air. You're going to be 50 for 5 before you know it.
And adding to that, I don't know, because I would speak to you as a coach. I mean, you're also a coach at school and at club level. But, I mean, you're a coach at club level. How important in terms of development is that for a player? What Tinashe Chibambwe said? Because even if you look at world cricket, some of the best T20 players and like the guys who are really rocking T20 cricket are also test players, many of them.
Like, so for me, because again, it gets down to under pressure, your basics are going to carry you across the line. All right. And 4-day, 5-day cricket, test your basics. More than the other lower versions, or I call them lower versions of cricket, but let's say the shorter white ball cricket versions. They really test your basics. And so to succeed there, you've already laid a foundation that you can then bat a little quicker in 50 overs cricket and bat a little bit quicker again when you're playing T20 cricket. But as long as you've got that foundation, you can do that. But you find a lot of guys don't have a foundation. So what they will do is they'll smash 100 in or 40 balls in one T20 match and then go for 6 to 8 months without getting anything in that same sort of quality. But then you go, you look at, like for me, another one, he's not even in the top bracket of T20 players. Guys like David Miller, South Africa, has played a lot of like red ball cricket. He's played a lot of red ball cricket in his foundational years. The other really, really great exponent of T20 cricket for me, AB de Villiers, played 100 test matches. Virat Kohli's played 100 test matches in that region, you know. And so it's because the fundamentals of cricket are learned and understood. And then if you understand the fundamentals, you can apply them to multiple situations. If you're just a big lad, big strong lad, a heavy bat who can hit a ball a long way, you can only apply that in very narrow circumstances. So I think that it's important for our next generation of cricketers here to understand that if you're going to play for Zimbabwe, you've got to look at succeeding across 3 formats. We're not interested in one format player.
I just wanted to add a name there. Chris Gayle. You know, have you seen his number in the IPL when he plays in the IPL? It's 337. That's not a T20 total. 333?
Yeah, it's his highest test score.
Exactly, it's his highest test score. To him, that's his self-actualization level. You know? He looks at that and marvels at that and say, you know what?
Look at me.
I was striking at 150 in red ball cricket against the likes of McGrath, against the likes of Jason Gillespie, you know, Brett Lee.
And those are proper bowling out there.
And that's where they need to be looking at, you know? That's where they need to be looking at. If you don't look at those standalone names, you are going to be tiptoeing around the game.
I've got to jump in there. We spoke about you hinted at it earlier about leaving $3 million on the table. Let me just remind you what it means. A former Zimbabwe cricketer said that a lot of guys are leaving $3 million on the table in their career simply by not playing in these leagues and playing franchise cricket. Okay. But going back to the ability to be able to do that, okay, it comes back to fundamentals. Because if you're playing franchise big leagues around the world, IPL, you're going to be playing against Australia's best. You're going to be playing against South Africa's best. You're going to be playing against England's best. You're going to be playing against New Zealand's best. New Zealand have just beaten India in a test series at home. Okay? So if your fundamentals aren't worked out, you can't really start to think in that direction.
So, Eli, a couple of interesting things have happened in the Logan Cup. Alistair Frost, Matthew Welsh, Nick Welsh have all moved to... And Jaden Shandendorf have moved to Steve Mangongo's Mountaineers. Jaden Shandendorf was in the under-19 team for Mangongo. Then Matthew Campbell's made his Red Bull debut, in the with his brother out at Rocks. So it seems as if this is a season where, because there's a lot of cricket that's coming up, a lot of moves have been made from a tactical point of view. From the ones you've seen, which ones do you think? Oh, and also the return of Solomon Mire to cricket, because he had quit not just international cricket but all forms of cricket. So what do you think is happening? Is it 2027 calling? Is it a busy next 3 years that's coming into cricket? Or is it maybe from the restructuring, there's a pathway that guys now are aware of? What do you think is happening under the bonnet?
I think it's the growth of Zimbabwe cricket. If you are to be honest, there's a lot of work that has been done by the Zimbabwe Cricket Administration to keep cricket going and to make it as competitive as ever. And when you see guys returning and even players that come from county sides, like there are a few players who have played for Nottinghamshire, I think, that have come through, they want to play here because they find value in those games that they're going to play. And also just that they are opportunities available for you to play if you perform well. Like if you do see how some of the guys were given opportunities going even to Kenya, Tino Tenda Maposa, how he has performed, that's a good opportunity. Clive Madande, his efforts both locally and even when he led the under 25 size in the All Africa Games, he had performances that raised his hand up. So if you do perform well, you stand a chance to be picked up. So then that does give people the hope and notion that, you know what, if I do well, I definitely can be considered to represent my country. And, you know, and ultimately what you're looking for is to have a beautiful career in the game. So the opportunities that are presented, so it's only when you pitch up and show up in these games that you get to be recognized. So it's also just also the like you're saying, the calendar that's up front, it's got lots of cricket to be played. And you can only play cricket when you have the right players. So people need to put their hands up.
What sort of numbers are you looking at this season to qualify for the national team? Like, what do you think should be the bare minimum?
That's a difficult one, Larry, because different players, obviously, if you want to break into the national side, there is no place in the world where you should be averaging less than 40 in the season. So if you can average 40 in, you know, in Logan Cup, and you have put together a couple of hundreds and a couple of 50s, then perhaps you can be in the framework. But if you don't average north of 40, there's no conversation. The guys who are playing there should continue playing. The only way you can break down that ceiling to say, I'm going to pull a Madande out of that team. Okay? You're going to score more hundreds. You're going to score more 50s. You're going to take your team past difficult situations and also amass a good average.
Again, because I think the three format ideal is the best way to go. I'm going to go a little higher than you. I'm going to go and say you average 40 across three formats. And you get 400s and 450s across three formats. Okay. And those hundreds, the bulk of them must be in 50 overs white ball cricket and 4-day cricket, Logan Cup. Because you have to play, you have to be ultra special to get hundreds in T20 cricket. Very few people actually are capable of doing that with any consistency. But I think I wouldn't look at a kid, if I was a selector, okay, a new face, and he doesn't have 400s and 450s this season coming, I wouldn't look at him for Zimbabwe. I would go with what I already have. Because if he can't get 400s and 450s, then he's doing what everybody else can do. So why would I go and do any, you know, look for anything different?
So finally going into this season, who do you think is going to win Logan Cup and List A?
Sorry, excuse me?
Who's going to win the Logan Cup?
Oh, that's a difficult one.
I want to say Mountaineers.
I want to say Mountaineers, yes, mainly for that reason, but most importantly because that's my team. That's my team, you know. And in as much as I know that Chelsea are not, you know, league runners right now, I'm actually putting money that they might win the league because they are my team. So as far as who is winning the league and who is winning the T20, I go more with my allegiance. My allegiance says Mountaineers.
Me, when India came, people asked, what's going to see us get? We're going to beat India 5-0. What am I supposed to say?
Exactly.
What, I'm supposed to be a realist? No.
Oh, exactly.
Oh.
I'll still put my money in Tuskers.
Okay.
I'm going to call you guys, both you guys, Thierry Henry, because Thierry Henry always says Arsenal, no matter, like, they'll be, like, can be 6-0 behind in Champions League. Is like, no, I think Arsenal's going to go win this one. I would like, just personally, to see Midwest Rhinos finally get a white ball championship.
And they've got Solomon Miller.
Because they've been there and thereabouts the last 4 or 5 years. They've gotten into the majority of the white ball finals, the 50 overs final, pro 50 final. It'll be nice to see them get that.
Okay, so what's your socials?
It's Lados Official.
Yeah.
He doesn't know why he calls it Lados Official.
I don't even know.
At Darlington Matambanazo. It has an R in it. D-A-R-L-I Matambanazo on Instagram, and same on Facebook.
Okay. And Master Eli has gone out to the bathroom.
He's got a lazy bladder.
Lazy bladder. And this is a Three Men on a Boat production for Three Mob Radio production for Three Men on a Boat. Catch us on all the socials. Go to 3-mob.com. The podcast is available on every platform except YouTube. YouTube, I haven't done that one. But every platform you listen to your podcast. My name is Larry Kwedabai.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show.